You're listening to Every Voice Matters with Dori Francis, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Good morning. Good afternoon. As you can see today, we have with us Randy Oakley, founder of Pasea Life. And Randy is actually enjoying a little beach time, and so is with us from Southern California?
Yeah, San Diego.
San Diego. So today we're going to talk about what's happening with young adults today, and there's a lot that's happening. Parent frustrations, which really became obvious from a lot of the questions that were submitted for today's show, and we're also going to talk a little bit about foster kids and what's happening with them, especially when they turn 18 and age out of the system. A lot of people may not know, but Randy has been a foster parent to, I think, 36 children over the years. And I know that he stays in touch with a lot of them, and a lot of them still come and see him, and I've actually met some of them, so I know some of the important work that Randy has done. So good morning, good afternoon, thank you for being here, and why don't you just start off sharing with us a little bit, Randy, about when you started Pasea Life, and just a little bit about, you know, what Pasea Life is.
Okay. Well, Pasea Life is actually a young adult transition experience is what we like to refer to it. It's something that I became very passionate about, and it actually started with the passion, having worked both professionally in education and therapeutic treatment, but also from my own children to start off with, and also from some of my foster care experiences as well. But the main goal of the Pasea Life is really to take dreams of young adults, 17 and over, and say, let's make those dreams become a reality. Let's go do the, let's go adult. Let's go do life. Let's find your independence. Let's find what you're passionate about, what wakes you up in the morning. And even if you don't know what it is, let's go figure it out. If you do know what it is, let's take it in, put it into bite-sized pieces and make it happen.
Well, we got quite a few questions that came in from parents of what I call young adults, and now what I'm calling the older young adults, because we're really seeing those now in their late 20s and sometimes even early 30s that are still struggling with trying to find their way. And I know a lot of this has even gotten more complicated because of COVID. Seen a lot of young adults just completely struggled with the loss of their college experience, even high school experience and work experience, just kind of across the board. It's added to, you know, so many things that are happening already. And then we've got some parents who've got some questions about foster care. So we'll just kind of mix in between the two and let it flow. Kathy from Colorado says, how do I get my 27-year-old daughter to transition into adulthood? And I actually know Kathy, and she's just really struggling with her daughter being at home, sometimes working, sometimes not, but just seems to have lost the motivation of, you know, here she is at 27. She must be looking at her peers that are continuing on and doing things in their life. And she's just kind of lost that footing. Do you see a lot of this? And what recommendations do you have?
Yeah, we're seeing obviously a lot of this right now, and we've been seeing it for years. I think, you know, this, I'm going to make some hasty generalizations perhaps, but one of the things, you know, kind of going back in time is I'm 55 years old. When I was turned 18, graduated from high school, I think most of us in our generation of time, we were just more like, oh, I graduated from high school, I'm out the door. Many of us were actually excited to get out the door and kind of were telling our parents, well, when I turn 18, I'm going to do this.
I still hear that.
I think a lot of, but I think that was the generation of the time.
Right.
And we, didn't know better. We didn't understand at that time frame how to tap into parental, family, and resources. We didn't learn at that time frame, at least for me, how to call up your dad and say, hey, I'm buying a car. Do you have some advice for me? We just kind of went off and did it. And we never, like, as a generation, we never really thought about, like, going back home was even an option. Over the years, there's a lot of reasons for this, and we don't need to spend too much time on it today. But, you know, we developed a different generation. A lot of that's come from the internet. Our young adults are actually what I would call probably the smartest and informationally rich generation of all times. Even this is kind of a sarcasm or a joke, but even if their education comes from YouTube, literally, our young adults today, they can look up stuff, they can learn stuff, they can self-educate at a speed and at a something that we just couldn't do in our time. We turned to our school teachers, our scout leaders, to our church leaders, to Encyclopedia Britannica. We had 26 books we had to pull off the shelf kind of a thing to learn something. And in today's generation, they can pull information so rapidly, so quick. At the same time, we also went through a phase in our parenting and inside of America culture, not just America. We're seeing the same thing in Italy, Germany, and throughout the world and so forth as well. But in that same time frame, we also went through kind of the phase, what I would call every kid gets a trophy. You get a participation trophy just for playing on the soccer team instead of having just a first place, second place, third place trophy. And the participation was enough just as it stood, even if you'd lost your games or whatever was going on. But through all of that, what's happened, and we could keep pontificating about a lot of those different factors, but when we talk about a 27-year-old, Kathy, and not wanting to leave home or really stuck, this has really become the new norm. It does not mean I feel like it's a healthy new norm.
Right.
It just means it's become
the new norm. That's why I hear that this is normal.
Yeah, but it's happening all over the place right now where our young adults are so intelligent, so informationally rich, but so full of anxiety, depression, and other things, which COVID has actually complicated this even to a greater extent this past year. But our kids have so many choices, they don't know what to do. For example, I use the metaphor like, you know, if I'm an 18-year-old young man and I'm dating and there's 100 women out there that I can swipe on this app or that app or whatever, it gets to a point where I can't even choose what to do because there's so many options. You know, back in my day, you know, we went to Skateland and we tried to pick up on girls or something, you know. You only had like the people that you hung out with at high school or in your neighborhoods. You know, but those choices become more difficult because there's so many choices. And then we get this paralyzation that takes place. So as a 27-year-old, it is time to launch. It does take time. It does take parenting that kind of nudges and pushes out the door. And I do have some ideas or thoughts about that that might circle back through the conversation as well. But anyway, there's a quick situation about what we're doing with our 27-year-olds. And unfortunately, it has become fairly normal. It's what we call the new 18 is 26, 27, right. 28-year-olds.
And we'll make sure that at the end of the show that people know how to reach you as well and can talk to you and ask some additional questions. And also, if anybody wants to call in and ask a question, you can call 323-203-0815. And we'd be happy to answer your questions live as well. Clay in Washington actually wanted to know, why do children end up in foster care?
Oh, foster care is a unique situation. I had my first foster child in 1992. His name was Scotty, and he lived with us for 5.5 years.
Oh, wow.
And still to this day, he calls, you know, me his Utah dad, Utah mom, and that kind of stuff. But foster care gets complicated. Usually it comes from a broken family system of some sort, usually involves abuse or neglect. Oftentimes it's neglect. A mom or a dad or a set of parents or a family is going through a situation where they need to take care of themselves to a point where they're just not able to give back to their children at the level that they need to. And unfortunately, that usually involves police officers or child protective workers or school teachers intervening, and the child become pulled out of the home and given a new home or a group home or whatever that may be. And sometimes it's really powerful and works out. And sometimes the child gets moved from one home to the next, to the next, to the next. Having had a lot of foster children in our home over the years. In fact, we just had our last one a little over a year ago with us in our home. But, you know, there's a lot of reasons, a lot of situations. But usually it begins with a sad story, to be honest.
Yeah, not something that we all want to necessarily hear about and be a part of. But, you know, we know that it's happening and it's going on out there. Jason in Hawaii says, I'm a single parent of a son who's 23. What options are available for my son to finish high school at this age?
Actually, that's pretty easy. There's a number of online courses in school. The trick is learning your son's learning style to see if the online options actually work or not, because not everybody can do that without help or this, that, and the other. But there's help all the way around, from like University of Nebraska's high school program. Brigham Young University has outstanding high school program that we use a lot, and so forth. There's obviously GED options. Even many states now have free high school online programs. Like the state of Utah has an outstanding online program that's actually free if you're a resident of the state of Utah. But there's a lot of options to finish high school regardless of age. You just can't do it going back to the public high school once you're over the age of 18, 19. You know, they don't let you come back because of that age difference. But there's a lot of options out there.
Okay. And then Kimberly in Arizona is asking, how long is a child usually in foster care? So you mentioned, you know, your first child, Scotty, was with you for 5 years. That's, you know, that's a significant amount of time.
To be honest, in the foster care system, different states do it differently. All of my foster children were in the state of Utah. And we as foster parents kind of learned to work with the foster care foundation, the foster care systems, and so forth, both publicly, and there were some private foster care placements as well. It really depends on the family that's receiving the child, because one of the hardest parts about foster care is we were also raising our own children. And so we had to make sure that we were protecting our marriage, our family, our children while we were accepting other foster children into our home. And for us, we were able to make it work, and we almost had never had a situation where we had to call up the caseworker and say, hey, this is just, we can't do this. But unfortunately, a lot of foster parents are the heroes of the system. At the same time, we're not always well trained. We're not, it's kind of a new experience. You just think you get into foster care and you just assume that love will conquer all.
Yes. We all think that. We all want that.
Yeah. And love is a major component to it, but there's so many other factors involved. For us, we were able to keep foster children long-term often, as long as it was the right thing to do for that foster child. The other part of foster care that's also unique and is something that we worked hard with is when the family or a mother or a father or both or whatever can be involved, or maybe a grandparent or a family member, it was actually, our job was actually to create a shelter for a short period of time in order to get them back into blood relatives, mm-hmm. into family reunification. And to me, my heart says, if I can get a foster child into family reunification, that was always the first goal, because that child will feel stronger with blood relatives or family that feels like that they really love and want that child, versus that child feeling like they're just pushed from one home to the next, to the next. Even our last foster child, which was a premature baby named Knox. Part of the reason why we had him with us for some time was because we were holding until a grandparent could get across state lines interstate compacts and all this other stuff that had to be involved between the state of Georgia and the state of Utah in order for this child to go back to blood relatives and be adopted by that family. So it just varies. There's so many different stories that I could go on and on about. So.
Right. Yeah, sometimes it can be complicated. Mark on the East Coast says, I have a daughter who's 24. She smokes pot daily. She graduated high school, and then she's done nothing. I can't get her out of the house. You know, so my first thought was, well, she's smoking pot daily. Is she smoking pot in the house? Is that being allowed in the house? You know, where's the parent enabling this as well? That, you know, not knowing the whole story, but that is just a thought that I had.
Right. No, and again, I would want to be careful without talking with Mark and understanding the whole story behind all of this. And so first of all, I'm going to just make a quick statement is that I don't smoke weed. But as a general rule, one of the things that I do learn to ask young adults of all ages is it doesn't matter if you're smoking weed, if you're in a legalized state or not. Really what comes down to is, can you function and what are you doing in the daytime? And so, you know, obviously if a young adult is using, you know, alcohol at age 24 or weed or things like that, even in a legalized state, but you're waking up in the morning and you're getting high at 10 a.m. in the morning and then wondering why you can't get a job, that answers
your question.
Yeah, that answers your question. That goes into the abuse category of weed and or inappropriate management or possibly even addiction kinds of things. But the real question comes down to oftentimes is as parents, one of the hardest things we have to do is to teach our children through our example, but also not enable them in the process. So I'll give you a quick story that just comes to mind. I don't know if this will apply to this situation. But a few years ago, I was working with a 32-year-old young lady, and she had some trauma and some stuff in her background, but there was also no reason. She's highly educated, charismatic, a lot of different things. And she was actually living with Laura and I in our home at that point in time. And we were doing financial coaching, job coaching, career coaching, and all these different stuff. And everything was going along really well. And we were doing this financial coaching with her. And she got to the point where she said, hey, you know what? I think it's time for you to pay for your own cell phone. And you're going to start to pay for your own car. You're going to do these different things. And so this young lady called up her dad and said, hey, can you release my cell phone from the family plan? Because I'm going to get my own plan. And so, you know, it's again, we had spreadsheets opened up and all this other stuff about her financial planning. We had this whole plan about becoming independent. And the first thing her dad did was like, oh, dear, why would you want to pay for your own cell phone plan? It's a lot cheaper on the family plan.
Oh, my goodness.
And I paused and I thought about it and I go, finally, and I could hear this because this is like taking place in my kitchen. I said, can I talk to your dad for a moment? And I kind of walked away to be more private. And I just said, you know, you're probably not going to take this well. I think you're going to be upset with me, Dad. But the first thing I got to ask you is, do you understand what you just told your daughter?
Yeah, that she's not able to do it herself.
Yep. I just shared it with him. I said, you just sent the most disempowering message to your daughter ever. You actually told her inadvertently that you do not believe that she is powerful enough to pay for her own cell phone. And now you're also questioning why she's not out doing real adult life. And Dad
didn't realize that.
He did not. He literally paused. At first, I thought he was going to have this kind of angry feeling with me. And I could kind of sense on the phone, you know, that he was tearing up. And he was just literally like, oh my gosh, Randy. I had no idea. I always thought that I was trying to help her.
Right.
And I said, no, you're not helping her. You're destroying her. We have that same thing with our 24-year-olds, in this case, a 32-year-old, our 19-year-olds, and so forth, is we have this thing that we have to really jump into and say, okay, am I empowering you as my child? through my thoughts, through my actions, by helping you do this, that, and the other. I'll give you some other examples. It goes back to, again, I don't know, you know, the individual situation, but it does start at a much younger age. There's a study, I think it was done by, Harvard and Grant, I think. Anyway, I have to go back and find it. But it basically was showing this major study of career and professional success and the correlation between that and doing chores at home. And it really does start at a young age. Is the more that we make our young adults, our children, do things that they don't want to do, the more that they start to actually do that in their adult life.
Sure. It clicks. It starts getting instilled. It gives them a sense of purpose and that they actually can do something.
Well, and that's all of us that have been like in relationships or marriage. You know, sometimes marriage is the most beautiful thing that can ever happen in our life. And also one of the toughest things we can do in our life. Working with an employer, when your employer says, hey, you know, you have to do this and you have to do that. And the boss said, and you're going like, well, wait a second, I didn't really want to do that.
Right.
You know, or even on a day like you can see in my window, today's a beautiful sunny day in Southern California. But what about the days that I have to go out and shovel 2 feet of snow out of my driveway and the last thing I want to do is go be cold? It's sometimes our grit, our own self-efficacy, our own growth come from doing what we don't want to do. So in my own parenting, which only gives ideas, doesn't mean I raised my children perfect or anything like that. Because, you know, they might be listening or something. but, you know, one thing I always started to do with my children starting at around age 12, 13, 14, 15 and so forth is I started to say, hey, you want that new bicycle? You want a car? You want this? I'll meet you halfway. I'll invest and work as hard in what you want as what you do. So if you want, you know, a car, I'll pay 50%. You pay 50%. You want a new bike, you pay 50%, I'll pay 50%. And that principle actually goes into our adulthood. My children, again, you know, it's just parenting. What worked for me might not work for other people. But my children knew that when they basically graduate from high school in that 18th year, that they had 3 months. They basically, you graduate in May or June. You got the summer off. Enjoy it. In fact, really take advantage of that summer. But come September, you got choices. And one of the choices is obviously college and vocation or go on some sort of a gap year program or whatever. Anything along those lines, I'd say I will invest in you. At the same time, if you just want to stay home, rent's $500. And by the way, if you don't pay it, you know, sort of thing, you know, and I share that with you. And my oldest daughter, when she turned 18, she, you know, she kind of jumped into life quickly. She was definitely a go-getter and still is very much so a go-getter. But she, you know, said, hey, as she was turning 18 and coming out of high school and so forth, she actually said, Dad, I want to rent your downstairs mother-in-law apartment. And I looked at her and said, Sarah, is this like a daddy deal or is this a business deal? She goes, oh, no, this is a business deal. And I said, good, $500 first of the month. And she always paid it. And then I circled back and said, but why do you want to live with me and with us as parents instead of just going off and getting an apartment and doing it on your own? She goes, and she actually said, Dad, I still want to be around you. I think I need some more time as a young adult. She was mature enough to say, I still need my parents. But at the same time, she had also been grown up with a principle as from us as parents that you turn 18, you got 3 months vacation kind of a thing. That principle, sitting down with a 24-year-old, it does come down to saying, hey, you know, son, daughter, dear, they, them, whatever. It's like, hey, it's time. What are we going to do?
I see a lot of kids not being raised that way currently. I really think we are in a generation of so much being handed to the kids. You know, I grew up kind of the same way at age 12. My dad was a veterinarian and he had me go to work after school. And I had to start at the bottom cleaning kennels, you know, and, you know, learn to work my way up. And years later, I was his office manager and ran his business. But I, you know, in talking with the kids just locally in my neighborhood, they don't have jobs. They don't have any interest in having a job. Their parents aren't instilling in them that they need to do that. But then what I also see is when they do turn 18, whether they're going to college or going to vocation or whatever it is they're going to do, they just kind of stop dead in their tracks because they have no clue what to do. And parents have just assumed that they would know what to do. So there seems to be a breakdown in communication between the parents and the kids during this, you know, progressive time of really talking about, here are some things you need to be learning before you're going to go out the door. That just seems to have stopped.
It has. In one of my own reflections, and this goes back to more foster children than that I've had than my own children, because by the time my own children got old enough, I think I started to figure things out faster as a parent. You know, one of the things about parenting is that we're not giving a parent manual. Nobody sent you, you don't go to school and take classes and say, this is how you teach your, you know, we really just, you just have children. And then one day you're just figuring out how to change diapers and, you know, do this sort of thing. And, but one of the things that I in my foster care, caregiving and so forth, especially with teenagers that I knew were going to age out of foster care and had no financial resources unless I gave it to them beyond the foster care system, is that, you know, with that said, is that I had to teach them those skills. I had to teach them how to mow the lawn, how to wash their own clothes instead of me doing them for them, how to cook an egg, how to cook spaghetti, how to make a meal, how to go budget shopping. I mean, even all the way down to some of the experiences I've had with young adults is literally going through the grocery store and going, let me teach you the psychology of most grocery stores.
Right.
In the middle of the shelves here are the things that they want you to see. Those are going to be the most expensive items. Here's the coupon section. This is how you do this. This is how you do that. And by the way, you know, you have to pay, like you have to pay with cash. You better have a calculator. Every time you put something in your cart and it's 98 cents, start adding it up. So you don't get to the register.
You don't have cash anymore at all. Everything's just a card and they just think the money's there.
Right. And that's where we get to this point where we have to teach it, where we model it. And even with my own children and foster children in my own home, and this is kind of a funny story, my own parents did this 50-50 thing. If I wanted a new, at that time, a new 10 speed, because that's all we got back in the day, you know, bicycle, or I wanted a new telescope, or I wanted my first car, my parents did this 50-50 thing. And before I was 16, you know, you really can't go get jobs other than maybe mowing the neighbor's yards or whatever. So my parents, I was expected to do a chore every single day. And then my parents provided other ways that I could earn money. And sometimes those ways to earn money was actually going and mowing the neighbor's yard, but my parents paid me. So kind of a thing, you know, but as a kid, I really thought that I was earning my 50% to that telescope or to that Schwinn bicycle or that car or whatever. And it wasn't until later that I realized, well, my parents were still paying me money out of their pocket, you know, that and so forth, but they taught me a principle of self-reliance. And then as I was old enough to go get jobs and so forth, it was just never even a thought about not doing that. And as I went into college, I was my first year of college and so forth. My parents did pay tuition, but I was expected to pay for housing. If I was not in school, you know, for like the summertime or something like that, I was expected to pay my own bills. And then the day, because I got married in college as well. And the day I got married, my parents said, hey, great job. Thank you. And they did give me a little wedding present that I used for tuition as well. But then it was kind of like, hey, you're on your own. You made a big person decision to get married and so forth. And congratulations. And, you know, and the joke later on in life, my father and my mother would tell me, like, you know, we were just so happy that you got married. We didn't have to pay for you anymore. but those principles that I learned in those early stages of parenting, they do work with our young adults today. And even inside of like Pasea Life or Atlas Life and some of the organizations that I coach in and young adults, we're doing the same thing. We're teaching our young adults today, even our 27-year-olds that are still living at home and so forth, we're teaching them first how to think differently so that they will know how to do differently. And so even in our life coaching models and a lot of the work that I do professionally today, we don't start with you got to get a job. We start with learning to think like an adult. And as we teach our young adults to think like an adult, then they start to actually naturally know what to do as an adult. And one of the biggest compliments that I get in our life coaching models and some of the work that I do professionally is when one of our young adults is basically on the phone saying, I don't need Randy anymore. I'm doing everything myself. I'm going, high five. That was the whole goal. You know,
we want.
Yeah, that's what we want. So, but we do have to put expectations out even on our 24-year-olds, our 27-year-olds, our 17-year-olds, our 13-year-olds. Our children, especially in today's world, were raised to the level of expectation placed upon them. If we don't create a higher level of expectation,
then it won't be there.
Why would you do that? Why right. would you just stay at home, video game, and be on your social media and everything else? Why would you go work if everything's provided for you?
Right. Shelby in Arizona wants to know, how does one become a foster care family?
Every state's slightly different. So first of all, there's state organizations that are, you do licensing, you are licensed as a foster care family. They do come in and do background checks on everybody that lives in the home. It's not just on like on me. If I have a 19-year-old son living in my home, they will do a background check on the son as well. Anybody that lives in the house. There is training that's mandatory. There's first aid, CPR, in addition to all those kind of things. There's also private placement foster care organizations as well. Usually the private organizations are based on special needs, which I've had both. I've had standard foster care kids through the state of Utah, for example. But we've also had foster kids that have come in because they're medically fragile, like with cerebral palsy, or they have feeding tubes or things like that. And that requires a whole nother level of training and medical training and things like that to be able to become a caregiver. My thing that I would share with anybody that wants to be a foster parent is just understand, first of all, it's one of the biggest blessings that you can ever give and do. Second of all, it is parenting. It's 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. And third, love is the most important ingredient, but it is not the only ingredient. So many of our foster kids, especially as they start to get older in the 11, 12, 13 and over category, they're questioning, why are they a foster kid? Mm-hmm. They're questioning, what happened to my mom and dad? What happened? Did I get thrown out to the trash? Why don't I belong to a family? They're creating a shell around their emotions most of the time. And that part's pretty important to understand in foster care for older children, teenagers, and so forth. And the best thing to do is talk about it. Sit down. Go sit on the back porch. You go and just open up those conversations. How do you feel about these things? Wow, I can really relate to how you must be feeling. But I'm so glad that you're with our family right here and right now. And just really bring foster kids in living what I call, we have the past, the present, and the future. And the way I like to teach my foster kids or to all of our coach, what I work in is to learn from our past, honor our past, live in our present. Don't, because if you live in the past too much, that causes depression, by the way. Live in the present, but plan for the future. Don't live in the future, but plan your future. But foster care, honestly, is some of the biggest blessings I've ever had in my life. And one of the biggest honors that I still feel like in my life today is when one of the young adults that have lived in my home call up years later and say, wow, dad, when they use the word dad, or you're my Utah parents, or whatever they feel comfortable with is okay with me. But when they stay in contact years and years later.
Yeah, that's got to be nice to hear how they're doing and that they remember being with you and everything that they gained. Gary in Colorado says, my son's going to be 18 next month and is graduating high school. He's interested in a gap year. What is a gap year? And is it a year?
In fact, the term gap year actually came from Europe and England and so forth. And so we used the word gap year because we adopted that term. So first of all, I would take out gap year right away and say gap experience.
Okay.
A gap experience can be almost anything. It could be 3 months, 4 months, 6 weeks. It could be a year. It could be 18 months or beyond. But one of the most powerful experiences that I had in my life is I did come out of high school and I deferred my college experience. And I did have a chance to live in France and Switzerland for a while, for a couple of years. And I learned another language. I learned new foods. I learned so much more. Especially as a young man that grew up in Kansas City, Missouri, or more appropriately pronounced Missouri, if you're from Missouri or Missouri, I just grew up on steak and potatoes. I didn't know what seafood was. I didn't know what oysters were. You know, I didn't know what the Swiss Alps were. I didn't know what the Mediterranean Sea was. The only class that I almost failed in high school was actually French. of all things. And now I had this opportunity and I took it and I was living in France. I was living, speaking in the language. Yeah, and everything else. But I look back on my time there and I am so sold on any young adult that can do a domestic or possibly an international gap experience of any kind is one of the most powerful things you can do. If you actually just go Google what colleges in the United States of America are doing right now, colleges are now accepting deferment
for
time for students to gap. And not only that, but students are able to put this on their resume. This is actually not, this is on job resume.
Resume. That's a positive situation.
Very positive.
Yeah.
And so I, and Dory, you're aware that I do gap year coaching because I take young adults and create customized experiences for them. I think several years ago, I actually had one of your students, Nick, that we actually customized an experience with him.
Adventure.
Yeah. For Nick, for example, if you remember, we deferred his college enrollment. He ended up going to live in Nepal for a few months in a Buddhist monastery, working in an orphanage on the weekend, teaching English as a second language. We brought him home to his family for a while. Then we sent him to South Africa. I think South Africa was like 5 weeks long.
Yeah.
And he worked in another children's orphanage at that point. And then we brought him back to his family for a while. And his third and final experience before entering college was a full gap year. It wasn't a service program. It was actually a gap experience with other young adults from around the world. But it was in Peru, working in the rainforest.
Doing some irrigation work.
Yeah. But Nick changed his whole major, his whole schooling, changed his whole direction in life just through that experience. And we see that all the time. Any young adult that can take an experience, domestic or international, I'm a thumbs up. You take it. Go for it.
Jackie in Colorado wants to know if foster kids do not do as well in school as others. I actually know Jackie. She's a teacher assistant. And she and I were having a conversation earlier this week, and she says she's just noticed that the kids in the classroom who are in foster care, nothing to do with their intelligence or ability, but they just seem to not do as well in school. And we talked about because they have so many background things that are going on, what's happening with their family, like you mentioned, maybe what's going on in the foster home that they're in. Are they the only foster child? Are there multiple children? I mean, there's so much going on in their life that it's definitely affecting their education. Have you had that experience as well?
I don't know the statistics on this, so I'm going to guess on this. So please don't quote me someday as being some sort of an expert on it.
Little disclaimer.
Yeah, that's my disclaimer. But my personal experience off the top of my head is intelligence is not the question with our foster children. Do many of them missing basic ABCs back in preschool because they were not in family systems that they had that, that training and so forth? Yes. But I don't think it's about intelligence. I think it's about survival. Is my experience with foster children and my own children, most of the time I could tell my own children, go do your homework. with my foster children, we sat down and did their homework together. And if I didn't take the time to sit down with them, it's not about intelligent or even executive functioning and things like that. I would refer to it as Maslow's pyramid. You know, we got to have air, water, you know, shelter and so forth first. Our second thing is security. And security is not necessarily just our physical world around us. It's our emotional, it's our heart. And when you're suddenly taken away from one family and system, you know, and put into this brand new family, and even though we're hugging and we're saying, you're so welcomed here and everything else, just imagine what that child's going through.
Sure.
You know, they're just questioning everything. Am I safe here? How long will I be here? Are you going to kick me out? And so there's an emotional survival that's taking place. And my own foster children that went through the high school years, I do have a couple of them that didn't graduate high school. They're actually doing well now, but they actually didn't finish high school as they turned 18 and so forth. And it wasn't because we weren't doing our part. They just were focused so much on their own emotional survival at that time that they just, you know, opted out.
Absolutely.
I think that's what a school teacher has to be seeing.
Mark in Hawaii says, I have a 19-year-old daughter who's dealing with anxiety, depression, ADD, stress, and overeating. She doesn't do drugs or alcohol. She has wanted to go to college, but during COVID, she's lost her self-esteem. How do I get her back on track?
Good question, because it's really, I do acknowledge, I think you do too, Dr. Francis, that as professionals, we are seeing that COVID really, really has set set our whole country and our world behind. It's really changed our world. And, you know, the student or the young adult or the person age group that I'm most concerned about with COVID is actually the high school senior that missed prom. Mm-hmm.
For the second year. For the second year now, they're talking about them missing prom.
It is that piece that it's the junior, senior in high school, college freshman, 19, 20, 21-year-old that I think we're going to look back on this time in COVID and we're going to say that was the one age group, 17 to 20-year-old, 21-year-old, that we're going to probably be the affected the worst through COVID. But the good news is at least we think there's a lot of light at the end of the tunnel. Our world seems to be opening back up, even though we hear all the other news about a new strain of this, that, and the other. But as our world opens back up, it literally is sitting back down with our kids and saying, okay, we're opening back up. We got to get out of the house. We got to do something. What are we going to do? And, you know, I call it motivational interviewing, you know, that, you know, you start asking questions, you start pulling out, well, what are your desires? What are we going to do? We have to do something and just get your feet back on the ground. That's it. And it does mean getting out of the house. And thankfully, I think you said Hawaii was where that question came from.
Yes.
You know, you're not talking about Minnesota or the cold weather or something. You don't have an excuse not to get out of the house, even in a world of COVID. So let's get out. Let's go walking. Let's go hiking. Let's go, you know, depending which island you're on. I lived on Maui for 3 years back in my 20s and stuff. There's always something to go out and do. And unfortunately, with our young adults that get really paralyzed in this process, that means that I have to go with you and take you with me and not take no for an answer a lot of times.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's something helpful out of all that.
I think that that's beneficial that the parents are a part of the process as well. And I want to make sure before we run out of time, number one, I know that it's new, Atlas Life, just starting to come into focus. Can you just spend a couple of minutes letting everyone know what Atlas Life is, where it's going to be, maybe when it's going to happen?
Okay. Well, during we did have a gap year program in Portugal, outside of Cascais or Lisbon, and with COVID, we had to shut down because we couldn't travel back and forth, and so that's given us some time to rethink about where we would want to be and what we would do slightly different in this experience. So we are planning on opening up Atlas Life in Malaga, Spain. So right on the Mediterranean Sea, we are probably going to still be 2021 January or so. before we can fully open. We're just still watching. We're actually ready to go. We have our American team is already ready to go and move to Spain and be back fully engaged. But we're just kind of watching travel and how acceptance is in travel and so forth. But our gap year program is unique. It is what we call a hybrid model. Hybrid means that it's not just a gap experience. It is a life coaching experience as well. Our goal inside of our gap year model is to actually take every young adult and to do a life coaching model with a foreign service-based experience as well. And so that's the main difference between what we do and some other the other options that gap year programs are. You might go to art history abroad out of Italy. Mm-hmm. And you really are studying art and history and college credits and things like that, which is a top-notch program, by the way. Yep. But with us, we're doing all these different experiences, but we're also really focused on a personal growth model and a life coaching model that is designed to basically hack your education and hack your life and speed up your life and get results faster in your life down the road and your personal life, your career, your educational life, and so forth.
Okay. And how can people reach out to you, Randy, to learn either more about Basia Life or more about Atlas Life as it starts to unfold?
Well, there's definitely websites at PACIALife.com. And the Atlas Life is actually the URL is myatlaslife.com. And on there, you can also find email addresses and contact me. You can look me up on LinkedIn and so forth. I'm always happy to jump on a phone call with a parent that's struggling with something and at least talk for like 20 minutes or so and see if I can at least point you in a direction, if that can be possibly helpful as well.
Okay. We're not going to get through all the questions, so I'm going to just kind of pick and choose here. As we've got just a few minutes left, Carla in Colorado says, I have a son who's 17. He's graduating high school this year. We have limited income. What kind of lower cost opportunities are available for kids? Our son is really motivated.
Honestly, you just said the key question at the end right there. Is low cost opportunities for a young adult that's not motivated, it's become pretty limited, to be honest. As far as personal growth, gap year program, domestic and everything else, honestly, if you're motivated, the world's wide open. There's scholarships available. There's sponsorships available. There's all kinds of opportunities available. But the key really is people will invest in you if you're investing in yourself. And like, for example, my wife and I have sponsored young adults from time to time too. And that's what the one thing that we look for is we'll help sponsor somebody, but we want to know that you're legit. But there's a lot of options and you're welcome to find me on like LinkedIn or personally or whatever, and happy to point you in some directions.
Okay. That would be great. Michelle in California, my daughter is 17 and graduating from high school this year. But she has no plans for anything, no job, no college, no nothing. Until COVID, she was motivated. But now, how do we get that back? So I think I'm seeing this question, multiple times in how COVID has really kind of stolen away, the motivation of these kids. And like you said, I just heard this morning that it doesn't look like prom's going to happen again, at least here in our local area, again this year. So we're trying to come up with some other things that we can do to celebrate these seniors, but really kind of has taken away from them things that they looked forward to, throughout their whole high school.
It really has. And with that said, I think the best prediction, and it is just a guess or a prediction, of course, but is that if you look forward, I think by September, our opportunities are going to really reopen back up. With the vaccines and this, that, and the other, I feel like that by September that things are going to open up. So now is the time to be sitting down with our kids and talking about, okay, rough year, let's accept it, bummer. And at the same time, September or whatever, it looks like things are going to happen. So what should we be doing? What do you want to do? And you just come back every single day, because oftentimes our young adults, especially 17-year-olds, their answer is, I don't know.
Right.
I don't know, right? And so parents, we start doing the research for them initially. But I had one mom that last fall was kind of working with her son doing the same thing. And she just basically made a commitment, like every single day, I'm going to walk in your bedroom and we're going to talk about what's next. And finally, her son actually said, you know, mom, are you going to do this again? Are we going to do this every day? She said, yes, we're going to do this every day until you commit to something. That we're going to do.
Commit to something. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you think about, let's assume that September is that magical date that opens up, is now we reverse engineer back to April and say, what are the stepping stones we have to do to get so that we're really ready to do whatever it is in September? And even if it still has three choices and we don't have to pick which one of the three we're going to do, we get three choices down and we start reverse engineering today what it's going to be.
Well, I really want to thank you for being here today, Randy, sharing lots of information. I know that Johnny Talk's going to be on, I think, in November, and he'll have a lot more information about what's going on with My Atlas Life in Spain. I'm, you know, interested in following that myself. I want to let people know that next week, my guest is going to be Travis Whitaker with Living Recovery Interventions. And Travis is going to talk about how addiction can destroy a life. He's got quite a story to share. And I think it'll be interesting to see what he went through, what he survived, how his family, you know, just dealt with some pretty horrific things and where he's at today. And then I want to leave you today with my Joseph Campbell saying, it takes courage to do what you want. And it seems like I pick these out weeks in advance and they always seem to match my guest for the day. But I think that that's a very profound statement, is really know what you want and go ahead and do it. It'll work. It won't. It's all going to be an experience either way. So thank you, Randy, for being here. I see the little tails in the background.
Yes, the puppies are running around. So
Aspen's actually asleep here on my feet, but enjoyed my time with you as always. And take care and enjoy that beautiful beach weather. Bye, everyone. Take care. See you next week.
You're listening to Every Voice Matters with Dori Francis, only on LA Talk Radio.